The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
This is the Ion Travel Podcast with CBS News travel editor Peter Greenberg.
Hi, everybody. Peter Greenberg here with another edition of the Ion Travel Podcast, this time broadcasting from the Four Seasons Hotel in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I'll sit down with Dean Trantalis, the mayor of Fort Lauderdale, to talk about some dramatic changes in the city and how it's dealing with population growth. Then, veteran TV news correspondent and Fort Lauderdale resident Gary Sanders on the birth and growth of Florida's own private railroad, something that's actually working. And then, a chat with Bonnie Clearwater, the chief curator at a museum that's been around for more than 60 years, and you've probably never heard of it, but should. First up, the mayor of Fort Lauderdale, Dean Trantalis.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Please welcome the mayor of Fort Lauderdale, Dean Trantalis. Mr. Mayor, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me today.
You know, I go back to my first times in Fort Lauderdale. I'm going to tell you a funny story. It was 1972. I was then working for Newsweek, and I came down here for a record convention, and I ended up at the Holiday Inn in their bar playing piano, and my other guest was on organ, and it was Billy Joel.
Wow.
That was, what, 50 years ago. I guess we've both done okay. He's done better in so many respects. But when I first came down here, the Holiday Inn was about what it was down here. I remember then coming back in the 80s, in the early 90s, you know, walking down Los Olas was not a fun experience. The only hotel that was down there, I think, was the Riverside. You look around now. Oh, my God. Every luxury hotel is here. The place is cleaned up. It's not just it's not just an escapee for spring breakers. And you've really turned things around.
Well, we'd like to think that we're still a place for spring breakers, but it's a totally different environment and scene right now. So today we look out the window, and it's a beautiful, beautiful day here once again in Fort Lauderdale. And yeah, the city has certainly changed over the years. I've lived here about 42 years, having been here since the early 80s, and has seen a complete metamorphosis of what the whole experience here is in our city. We see Spring Breakers here, every March and every April. But the same thing is they're still college kids, you know. So their parents, you know, they give them the sense of what's right and wrong. They arrive with a great deal of enthusiasm, and we allow them to leave with their dignity. And and so it's one of those things where Fort Lauderdale is an experience for everybody, young, old, families, single people.
So what you're trying to say, it's a better managed spring break site.
Right. So what happened in the early 80s was a disaster. What happened was hotels were run down and cheap, and it was a magnet for kids who didn't have two nickels to rub together. And, that movie in 1960, Where the Boys Are, resonated for decades.
We remember that movie.
Right.
Absolutely.
It was a breakout movie for Connie Francis, who still lives here. And
does she really?
Yes, absolutely. She lives in the area, yeah, and met her several times. She wrote a book, and a great lady. Gives a lot to charity. And the thing is that the city fathers at that time, city fathers and mothers said, hey, you know, we had enough of this. It was ruining our landscape. It was ruining our brand. And so we put an end to it. And the folks that were in charge at the time decided they were going to end spring break as we knew it. And over time, much like Miami Beach will experience again, they'll see a revival like we've seen a revival. We went from, $300 a week hotels to $300 a night hotels. And we're sitting in a beautiful hotel here. And, we have all the great brands, the Conrad, Four Seasons. Who knows what will come down the pike. There are plenty of beautiful places to stay at all price ranges. And what's great about Fort Lauderdale now is that we have so many family-friendly activities to participate in. As many of the people know, we have Inter-Miami soccer plays here in Fort Lauderdale. Leo Messi can be seen on the streets and in the grocery store, just like everybody else. We have
And you're working with David Beckham on the soccer stadium.
Well, David Beckham and Inter-Miami, absolutely. And we also we've also completely revitalized our world famous swimming and diving venue here at the International Swimming Hall of Fame. We have three new pools, the tallest dive platform in this side of the world, 27 meters.
Have you done it?
I've looked at it, dreamed about it, but watched. I think you have to be 24 and fearless to be able to dive off of that.
That rules both of us out.
Yes. And now our championship Panther team, hockey team, is now beginning to move east, and they built two beautiful new ice skating rinks here in our Holiday Park, one for practice for their team and one completely open to the public. So all those families that, especially the older adults that have skates collecting dust in their closets, time to dust them off and come with their kids, and it's a whole new sport, which is really a great sport in the summertime because it's a cool environment and it's a great place to escape.
Oh, listen, I remember when I was a correspondent for Newsweek, they sent me to Houston in the summer, and no air conditioning, you fried, except if you went to the Westin Galleria.
Yeah.
They had an ice skating rink. I don't ice skate. I just went there to stand next to the rink.
I know. It's a great year-round destination. We'd like to think that Visit Lauderdale, it's a place for everybody under the sun, and our diversity is something we're very proud of. People from all walks of life. And
Well, let's talk about that.
Sure.
Because, going back 40 years ago, that was not the case.
Well, we had a different kind of attitude back then. And I think over time, as more people moved into the area, we have a large LGBTQ population here, which we're very proud of. And we have a large African-American, Haitian, we have Brazilian, we have people from England and Italy and Romania. It's really a great mix of cultures and attitudes that blend well together, and we're so pleased to embrace them.
And, when you think about the three airports, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, and Palm Beach, I got to tell you, Fort Lauderdale is my favorite of the three because it's a more manageable airport.
Well, It certainly is designed in a way that is more user-friendly, and we don't have the same capacity as Miami. Miami certainly has a larger capacity, but a lot of folks that are flying domestically do choose to use Fort Lauderdale. Even people in North Miami, they'll come to Fort Lauderdale before they'll go to their Miami airport.
Yeah, I know. It's an easier way to get in and get out.
Right, it is.
And fewer delays.
Fewer delays. You know, we don't have the same shopping experience. I guess they have better stores at the American Airlines terminal.
Yeah, but wait a second. Anybody who's listening to this show, if your idea of a great experience is to go to the airport to shop, you're living a delusional life.
Well, it makes sense because if you're delayed for 3 hours, you need something to do.
Yeah, but if you build that into the experience, why would you even go to that airport if you know, right? I mean, come on. Retail therapy has another way to go.
Well, they thought of everything down there, I guess. But here in Fort Lauderdale, we're very, very happy. I'm part of the Greek community, having been born and raised in Connecticut and came down here. All my grandparents came from a wonderful little village on a seaside island. And today, their grandchildren are now serving public office in South Florida.
And two of my favorite restaurants are here in Fort Lauderdale. One is called Greek Islands.
Right.
I go there every time.
If you can get in.
I knew you were going to say that. There's always a line.
Say you're Mayor Trentalis and they'll treat you well.
Saganakis.
Yes.
Got to go for the Saganakis and the octopus. And then, I don't know if you know this other place, it's a great place to go in the morning for breakfast. It's called Croissant Time.
Oh, yes.
I mean, what a great French bakery. They use butter and then more butter.
They're a true, authentic French bakery and restaurant. Those folks have been there for quite a few years. And they have...
And it's just located in a small little strip.
Right. Yeah. But everybody knows where it is. And we're very proud to have them. And so we have great French food, Greek food, a lot of Italian restaurants. There isn't a place to go hungry around here, I'll tell you.
I know so many of my friends. I mean, we've always known about the New Yorkers who come down for the winter. But the pandemic triggered something else. It was everybody coming down for good.
Well, what we discovered, and I think a lot of the southern states, Texas, Arizona, as well as Florida, saw a mass exodus from places up north and places out west, Californians, people from Colorado, oddly, you know, people decided they needed a break. They needed a break from the intensity of their experiences, the high taxes that they were suffering from, and to know
there's
that
there's no state income tax, right?
There's no state income tax. And the byline we have down here is you work in the cloud and live in the sun, you know, and you could do that here. If you work remotely, especially right after COVID or during COVID, a lot of people were working remotely. And they said, why are we sitting looking out at a snowy street corner when we can be down here watching the waves break against the beautiful sand that we have here? So that became a mantra that made itself known throughout the Northeast and the Midwest. A lot of people from Illinois came here. You know what? They've stayed. And the city of Fort Lauderdale's population continues to increase significantly. So where have we accommodated all these new folks?
Well, that was my next question.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's had two significant impacts. One, in terms of the housing costs, it has definitely driven up housing costs at all ranges, at the low end, the high end. Homes that were selling for $2 million are selling for $5 and $7 million, and the rental rates have gone up significantly. So what we've done is that in terms of the increase in population, most of the increase has been young kids, 20s, 30s, and so we developed a downtown. We have an area in the downtown, we call it Flagler Village, and then areas south of our river, where most of the new population has been moving into. This protects the single-family home neighborhoods from having any increased density. So by allowing most of the population to sort of be attracted to the downtown, we've created an urban experience now with restaurants and entertainment features and parks and all kinds of great things that great cities are known for. And we're slowly building that downtown. It's created a wonderful vibe. And I talk to these folks that move here, and they say, why didn't we discover this sooner? And I said, I know. Why didn't you discover this sooner? This has been here for everyone. And so we're trying to do our best to manage traffic and infrastructure. We have an aggressive infrastructure building program here in our city, sewer, water treatment, sewage treatment. We're going to make sure that...
Can you expand to fill the need?
Exactly. As we expand, we have to make sure we can embrace the growth and that we are resilient and sustainable environment. And we are definitely, I will say this, I'll confess that the city was a little bit behind the eight ball a few years back, but I think we're ahead of the game now, and we are definitely moving forward and making sure that we're able to sustain this growth.
What about the challenge that so many other cities have had with Airbnb? I mean, you know, you have situations in other cities where people will come in and take over entire apartment buildings and then just rent them out with no real management.
So, you know, vacation rentals have definitely been the bane of our existence in some communities. For the most part, they've been pretty respectable. I talk to people who live in all types of neighborhoods, and Airbnbs have been... Have for the most part been a sort of an alternative to the hotels. So we see them all over the city of Fort Lauderdale. It's actually helped to prop up the real estate prices, and investors will come in and pay higher prices than say a family would for a typical home. But I think we've, for the most part, turned the corner on management. We've been able to implement rules that I think are going to continue to allow us to manage the Airbnbs. But unfortunately, the state legislature, state of Florida, has kind of tied the hands of municipalities. They've put restrictions on what we can do and what we can't do. So it's kind of taken away our ability. We can't control the frequency of a rental. We can't control the length of time in which
that's always the key, right?
That's always the key, right? So, but we do require a manager, you know, that's within reach. We do require, you know, a lot of other things that the state law does not prohibit us from interfering with. So for that reason, we've been able to at least have some way to get in there, and the bad actors, we weeded out, and I think we're going to continue to be successful in that regard.
And on balance, what's your biggest challenge right now?
I think the biggest challenge we have today is managing growth. And trying to maintain
a statewide challenge.
It's too. A statewide challenge. When you have 1,000 people a day moving into the state of Florida, it's a statewide challenge. But they're not all going to the same place. You know, they're going to places that are exciting, the places that are fun, the places that provide a quality of life and a great experience. And Fort Lauderdale is one of those places. It's, I think, the best place in Florida.
Of course,
and
you do.
and I think that we'll see more and more people learning how Fort Lauderdale is a place where they want to locate. And when I say that because, you know, it's a great place to, you know, start a career and build a family. And I think that we're seeing more and more of that experience and more success stories happening in our city.
Mr. Mayor, so what other challenges does Fort Lauderdale face?
We also have other things. We have climate change. We have to be a more resilient city and trying to withstand the impact of rising sea levels. That's a great challenge. Continuing with our efforts in sustainability and infrastructure. You know, we have flooding that happens. We had a flood last year. Nowhere in the country has there ever been an experience of getting 26 inches of rain in 5 hours. I mean, it's just one of those natural anomalies that occurred here in our backyard. So many people were flooded out of their homes. It was really terrible. We were able to work with the federal government to get them in here and help families out. But it was never really enough. So we'll always have to deal with climate change challenges. So
you know, when you say you have to deal with them, how do you do it?
So we raise our seawalls. We try to come up with ways that we can promote drainage in terms of whenever there's a storm that brings a lot of rain. So there are all different kinds of measures. Rebuilding our water treatment plant now because the one we have now could never withstand a Category 5 hurricane. So in rebuilding it, we'll at least make sure that people have water should we have a bad storm here. Things like that. Those kinds of hardening our systems to be able to withstand the impact of these unusual natural occurrences that will continue to happen in our city.
And of course, there's also mass transit.
So traffic is always a concern. you know, in terms of the new growth happening in our downtown, we'd like to think that we can create pockets of communities where people don't get into their cars to go to the store or go to a restaurant or whatever. They can walk to places. That's the goal. In terms of commuter traffic, we will always be a destination for commuters because we have a number of bedroom communities surrounding our city. And we are working now on a rail system between Miami and West Palm to do a commuter rail system.
Now we're talking Brightline?
We're talking Brightline, but also Brightline 2.0, where we're adding more trains and more stops along those routes. So people who live along the tracks would be able to just hop onto a train and get to wherever they're planning to go.
And of course, Brightline keeps expanding. I mean, they're going all the way to the Orlando airport now.
They are in Orlando now. They're hoping to go to Tampa, and I understand they announced a new stop in Stewart, so that'll add another place along the current route. So, you know, Florida's finally entering the 19th century. You know, where trains were once a thing in South Florida.
Well, the trains actually built Florida. That was Flagler, wasn't it?
Exactly, Henry Flagler. Florida was built around Henry Flagler, South Florida at least.
Yeah.
And they originally were designed to transport beans and tomatoes and then passengers. And then, you know, the motor vehicle is the king of South Florida. And most of these communities are built around roadways to accommodate cars. So we have to go back to that era where we can now talk more about mass transportation. And I think all the various governments in South Florida are working together to make that happen.
And when you think about it, I mean, you want to take cars off the road. That's what you really want to do.
Well, we're not going to take cars off the road, but what we're going to do, because the cities have been designed for cars.
Yeah, but so, the interstates here are not happy.
Right. So we're not going to take cars off the roads. What we're going to do is try to minimize the increase of cars on the roads.
Got it.
Okay, because the future populations hopefully will settle in places where they will use mass transit. The people that live here now, forget it. We're all tethered to our cars, and we're never going to get out of them. And it's easier to get somewhere by car than it is by train.
Okay, that brings up another question, because we saw everyone wants to jump on the EV bandwagon. We saw Hertz ordering 100,000 EV cars, and then selling them because the demand wasn't there because people were concerned about finding charging stations. What are you doing in that regard?
So the industry is starting to ramp up. I mean, if you think of 100 years ago, how many gas stations were there on the roads? Few, if any. So people didn't go long distances because they didn't know if there was going to be a gas station down the corner. So America ramped up, and the infrastructure that to accommodate the motor vehicle has occurred. Now we're in another cycle where now we have to do the same thing for electric vehicles. So it's going to take a generation or two to install that infrastructure throughout the country. But you're absolutely correct, myself included. I would be hesitant to think that I'm going to take a long distance trip on an electric vehicle, because you know you stop halfway on your trip and you want to plug in at the Hampton Inn, and all the charging stations are taken because people got there at 4 in the afternoon and you're there at 8 o'clock at night and you're stuck, right? So especially since some of these cars don't charge up that quickly unless you bought a vehicle that does. So we're kind of in an interesting transitional period, and it's exciting times.
My thanks to the mayor. If you've been watching NBC over the past, let's say, 3 decades, then my next guest needs no introduction. Veteran correspondent Carrie Sanders has circled the globe chasing stories more than just about anybody I know. But his favorite destination is also where he calls home, Fort Lauderdale.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to Fail Better, David Duchovny's new podcast with Lemonada Media. On Fail Better, David, who has experienced both low and high-profile failures throughout his life, explores the vast world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives. Each week, he'll chat with guests like Ben Stiller, Bette Midler, and more about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, he hopes listeners can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. A resident here since 1991, but my wife is a native. And so she has told me about the Fort Lauderdale that I didn't know. I did come here as a college student.
I read that police report.
And of course, it's a very different beach time these days. But yes, Fort Lauderdale is one of those cities that's gone through these incredible transformations.
I mean, I go back, you mentioned 1991. I go back to when I came here, which was before 1991. But let's talk about 91. Fort Lauderdale was dead. I mean, you wouldn't even walk on Los Olas Boulevard at night. There was only one hotel of consequence there, the Riverside, right? And now, what an explosion. Within, what, 5 blocks of where we are right now, every luxury hotel.
And I think what kind of just really made me kind of chuckle was those of us who live here and kind of have seen the transformation and are aware of it. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal talking about how Fort Lauderdale is now hip. Who knew? And I was like, those of us who live here know.
And what makes it hip?
I think it's sort of an energy, and it's not Miami, you know? And Miami is...
There's your branding right there. It's not Miami.
I think so. And it's just given it sort of an energy that's taking place here that, you know, in many ways, it's kind of like everything's kind of hitting at the right time. And, you know, Florida itself has taken off. Maybe it's because of the pandemic. Maybe it's because that there is no sales. I mean, there's no income tax here. You can add a lot of things together, but there's this kind of like everything coming together at the right time. And Fort Lauderdale's on the East Coast, and I just spent some time in Tampa. I love Tampa, but the energy here is like hyper compared to the Tampa Bay area.
And of course, I'm a big fan of the airport here. It's easy to get to. It's easy to get in and out. They've opened up some new terminals and stuff. But the bottom line is it's close, and it's not crazy and congested like Miami.
And they actually finally fixed the airport. You know, I mean, it was...
Oh, I remember.
They've really improved it. So it's not like you're only going to get like a stale sandwich. They've got you know, everybody has to go to the airport early these days because you have to sit around and get through the long lines. But the lines work. It works.
So basically, you judge airports by the quality of the sandwich?
Well, as you know, there's been a big debate on the quality of the amount of money you have to spend to eat, too. And
well, listen, we just did a story about the cost of beer at airports, right? I mean, the 50 busiest U.S. airports are now serving beer and many different brands of beer, but the actual cost is out of control. The cheapest beer at an American airport is Portland, Oregon, at $4.33 a glass. The most expensive beer, New York's LaGuardia, at $12.33 a glass. And it's crazy.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, look, when you travel these days, nothing is comfortable. But I will say, the kind of secret, if we're going to talk about Fort Lauderdale's airport, is that if you're coming to South Florida, you may find it is just easier to fly into Fort Lauderdale than it is to choose Miami or Palm Beach. And a lot of people don't know that this megalopolis of South Florida has 3 airports, and that makes it kind of like New York. We have 3 choices, and not many places in the country have that. I guess in Chicago, there would be the 2, but, you know, in Dallas. But other than that, I think of so many places, 1 airport. Go to Atlanta, you got 1 choice.
Exactly. And given that choice here, I wouldn't go to Palm Beach for another reason. And people are going to get angry when I say this, but most of the people I know who fly to Palm Beach, they're whiners. Stewardess. I didn't get a cherry in my car. Stop it. Just stop it. You're not on the plane to eat. And of course, the other thing is Palm Beach is the capital airport of what we call the miracle flights. Do you know what a miracle flight is?
I do. And it was a flight attendant that clued me into, you show up and you need to get on early in a wheelchair and everything else. But when the plane lands, remarkably, there's a miracle because everybody gets up and walks off the plane.
No, they run off the plane. It's amazing because you get to the jetway when you land and you see all those attendants there with the wheelchairs and the names on it. And they're just standing there as people just go running by them. I mean, this is the miracle flight. And Palm Beach, more than any other U.S. airport, is the capital of that scam.
You know, the one thing, though, that made my life easy, and nothing is easy about being a correspondent and running around doing the news because you go everywhere, was there was always one of the three airports that I could leave from and always one of the three airports that I could return from. And that just made my life that much easier.
We've been talking to Kerry Sanders, my old buddy from NBC, Fort Lauderdale resident, and a guy who spends more time on airplanes than anybody else I know except me. But let's not talk about airplanes for a second, because there's been sort of a revolution in train travel in this part of the world, which you don't see very often these days. Amtrak keeps talking about high-speed rail, but they haven't done it. The condition of the tracks for Amtrak is still not great. Even if they have new rolling stock, they can't put it on the tracks, as the tracks can't really hold it yet. But here in Florida, this is not an Amtrak story. This is a Brightline story. Explain.
Well, the idea of a private railroad, this is money that came from Fortress, but it's primarily private money. And there have been some bonds, but think about private money building a railroad. Nobody thought it was possible because they said, well, who is going to ride on the railroad? And so it started out with Brightline starting from Miami, coming up to Fort Lauderdale and going to West Palm Beach. And that's on the FEC tracks, you know, and so they're East Coast tracks as opposed to the ones that are a little bit to the west. And then they added stations in Aventura and in stations in Boca. And now they're adding one. Well, they just added Orlando, and then they're going to add one soon in Stuart, Florida. I think anybody who lives in an urban area can appreciate the crazy traffic that has happened in our country. And
it's all our automobile traffic.
Yes, but in South Florida, where I-95 is the main road and everything else is a surface road with lights, and I-95 just has way too much traffic. Now, you noted I've been here since 1991. When I moved here in 1991, they began widening I-95. They're still widening the highway. There is still construction underway. And I went the other day to Miami Beach from Fort Lauderdale, going down 45 minutes. It actually wasn't that bad of a drive because I was dropping a friend off. It took me an hour and 54 minutes to get home. And I told my friend, love you, but I don't think I'm going to do this again. You're going to have to just figure out how to get down there. And what she should have done is she should have taken the train and gone down on Brightline and then used one of the services like Uber or Lyft, or they actually have some shuttles, and just done that to get to the final leg of her trip to Miami Beach. And I do know, because I've taken the train now to Orlando twice. I've taken the train multiple times in South Florida, and I know that it is clearly a solution because there's a lot of people riding it. I think they've had, if I remember correctly, like 5 million people have ridden this train so far.
And of course, they've opened it up. You mentioned Orlando. It's a train that goes right to the Orlando airport.
Exactly. So you are very well located in Orlando to be at the airport. The plan is eventually for them to maybe get over to Tampa. And so that eliminates the other crazy road in the state, which is I-4, which is the east-west, sometimes nicknamed Die-4 because people are in so many accidents on that highway. So you're talking about something that is really unheard of in this country, the idea of private trains. You know, I was in Japan recently, and I went on the bullet train there, the Shinkansen.
Well, the thing you have to know about the bullet train is you got to be fast, because those doors open and those doors close. They don't take, if you're not in when that door opens, you'll be out.
But I couldn't believe to myself that this has been around for 50 years.
They're so far ahead of us.
But we should be there, shouldn't we? We should be.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm just sort of actually happy to see that this is happening. And the Brightline people are now doing the same thing where they're beginning to put together the tracks from an area near Los Angeles that'll run all the way out to Vegas. And that'll be at like 186, 200 miles an hour. In Florida, they like to say that this Brightline train is running as a, not a high speed, but as a higher speed, because its top speed on the what they call the Cocoa Curve up near Cocoa Beach is like 125 miles an hour. Trust me, you're sitting in there and you're looking at the traffic and you're blowing past it. You're really happy you're on the train. And yes, it's expensive. And yes, it is maybe a little different than getting in the car all on your own. But you want to know something? you are so relaxed when you get to your destination. And I didn't actually know the value of that until I've done this a couple times.
Well, the other day I was flying to New York and I had to get to the west side of Manhattan and I was on a red eye, which means it gets into Kennedy about 7 a.m. I had a choice of getting in a cab that would have cost me close to $100 because of tolls and because of how much cabs cost, or I could take the air train to the Jamaica Railroad Station, transfer to the Long Island Railroad, and then take the E train on the subway, which took me within 600 feet of where I needed to go. And, okay, the air train was $8.50. The Long Island Railroad was $11. And the subway was $2.90. So for about $22, I didn't have to schlep. I was not stuck in traffic. And I got there in 28 minutes.
You know, and I think that's sort of the untold story here is, you know, I go in and out of Atlanta and I would always, this is not a train, this is more like a, you know, a subway, even though it's elevated using MARTA. But the idea of, yes, it might be slower until there's an accident, until there's even a flat tire. So I like the idea of knowing it's going to take me from point A to point B in a period of time. And that's what I like about Brightline. If I'm going to go to downtown Miami, I know how long it's going to take me to get there, as opposed to, do I need to leave an hour and a half early only to find out there was no traffic and now I'm killing time in downtown Miami?
My thanks to Gary. It's a museum that has no permanent collections. You've probably never heard about it. And it's been around for 60 years. But if you want to know anything about Florida, you might want to visit the NSU Art Museum. Curator Bonnie Clearwater is my guide. Bonnie, welcome.
Thank you.
You know, it's interesting because there are so many museums that people don't even know about or they overlook. And until we did our research on this show, I didn't know about NSU. So tell me more about it.
Well, that's why I'm glad that you're giving us this opportunity. Actually, NSU Art Museum Fort Lauderdale has been around for over 60 years. It was formerly the Museum of Art Fort Lauderdale.
So that's probably where I knew it, yeah.
And in 2008, it merged with Nova Southeastern University, which is one of the largest research universities, private research universities in the country.
And now, of course, one of the things that, you know, when you try to define what's in a museum, it's difficult these days because so many museums are so eclectic. You have the legendary artists, you have the masters, you have emerging artists. How would you define yourselves?
Well, we are very unique in that we have very in-depth collections that are unique, not only to the region, but to the world. And it takes us from a late 19th, early 20th century with the biggest collection of the Ashcan School artist, William Glackens and his circle, to the most cutting-edge artists of today. But we also have a major collection of Latin American modern artists and one of the first collections of Cuban artists in the region.
Yeah, I want to get to that in a second. But, of course, I'm looking at names like David Smith and Frank Stella and Roy Lichtenstein. I mean, those guys are legendary.
Yes, and that's the other part of our collection is our modern collection. When the founders of our museum started out in the 70s, they had a specific goal of the collection and our programs to be reflective of the diversity of South Florida region. And that is what you can see in our current collections and programming.
And then you mentioned the Cuban artists.
Yes, well, in 1993, our museum in Fort Lauderdale was the first museum, permanent museum in South Florida to launch a collection of Cuban artists, particularly the artists in exile.
Isn't that interesting that it took somebody till 1993 to recognize that?
Yeah, well, we were very fortunate. We had our former curator is Cuban. And he recognized the need to launch a collection that recognized the major contribution of the artists who were either born in Cuba and arrived right after the revolution or were born here and raised here. And the contribution, the major contribution that they have made not only to the South Florida art scene, but the entire nation.
You know, when you look at the changing nature of our relationship with the Cuban government, you know, museums have been traditional in doing foreign exchange work and doing exhibits that travel. Have you had any relationship with the Cuban government?
Not with the museum. We work nationally, internationally. We have works from that collection on loan right now to the Getty in Los Angeles and previously at the Brooklyn Museum. So it's a part of our collection that's very much in demand from museums, major museums, as well as regional museums around the country.
You know, I mentioned, I haven't mentioned yet, but I noticed that you've got some stuff from Mark Rothko.
Yes, well, actually, I was the curator of the Mark Rothko Foundation, and unfortunately, our museum was one of the museums that, back in the 80s, we delivered works to. However, I was able to, a good deal of the works were given to the National Gallery in Washington, D.C., and a few years ago, I organized a show called Happy, and I was able to borrow a work by Rothko for
you know,
that.
You mentioned the show in Washington, D.C. On CBS Sunday Morning, just a couple of days ago, they had a feature on Mark Rothko. And I got to give you my initial impression and then my later impression. Mm-hmm. When I first saw Mark Rothko's work, I went, I can do that. All it is squares on a painting. You know, then you take your time. And then you look at the actual detail of the color gradations and the texture. And you have to get up close and personal to see it. Because if you don't, you're just going to look at it as like blocks of color on paper, right?
Right. Yeah, it's so important to see all art in person. But particularly with Rothko, it is the variation and vibration of colors that creates that emotional jolt when you see it. And also the scale. It's very important.
And you don't see that scale unless you're up close and personal.
Absolutely.
That's the difference. Mm-hmm. When people come to the museum, what's the one piece that, in your opinion, that's their biggest surprise that they're not expecting to see or experience?
Well, because we're always changing works, we don't have a permanent collection up per se. So it's always a surprise to see even works that they knew well in a new context. I think that the work that gets the most attention is one of the works that is up all the time. And it's a commission that we did many years ago with the Haitian artist, Edward Duval Carré. And that is probably the public's most favorite work to come visit over and over again.
We're talking to Bonnie Clearwater, the director and chief curator for the NSU Art Museum here in Fort Lauderdale. You mentioned Haitian artists. I'm particularly fond of Haitian artists for one reason, and you're going to laugh at me. My favorite colors are like blue and green. And Haitian artists are fond of blue and green. And the detail work, and especially in some of the larger pieces, it's overwhelming.
Well, we happen to have a very large Haitian collection. It was started in the 1970s. So it has considerable historic work, and we just presented a major show of our Haitian collection, which just closed. However, as I mentioned, the major installation by Edward Duval Carré is up permanently.
Is there a piece of art that you haven't been able to get?
I think that we have been pretty much able to get whatever we want. We've been very fortunate. The museum has the respect of museums, private collectors. They know that if we are asking for a work for an exhibition or to be donated, that it is an essential work, and they know that we know what to do with it.
So basically, if Bonnie wants it, Bonnie gets it.
I hope that's how it works. I think it's the reputation of the institution.
Of course. I'm giving you credit, though.
Well, thank you.
But you're also working with emerging artists.
We work with that's always been an emphasis that I have had in my career. But also, NSU Art Museum has a long tradition of seeking out and presenting particularly emerging artists from the region. And we have continued that tradition at this museum.
Absolutely. And you're open how many days a week?
Six days a week. It feels like seven sometimes.
Admission?
Admission is all children 12 and under are always free. at our museum. For seniors, there's a discount of, I believe it's $12. For adults, general admission is $16. But we have multiple ways. We believe in access wherever possible. We have a free first Thursday every month till 7 o'clock at night. Residents of Fort Lauderdale, they get in free the last Sunday of every month.
My thanks to Bonnie, to Carrie Sanders, and to Fort Lauderdale Mayor Dean Trantalis. And my thanks to you for listening to this Eye on Travel podcast. For more conversations with the world's leaders in travel, as well as answers to your travel questions, be sure to rate and review this podcast wherever you happen to listen to podcasts. And for all the breaking travel news, you know exactly what to do. Just log on to petergreenberg.com.
The Eye on Travel podcast is produced by Amanda Morris and Anthony Protis Chung. For more content from Peter Greenberg and the Eye on Travel team, visit petergreenberg.com. Eye on Travel is a production of CBS News Radio.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and host of the Money Watch podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It is a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and maybe more importantly, on your life. Follow Money Watch wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover...
Inside the house, there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God. This is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings, early and ad-free on the 48 Hours Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts.